Okay, so welcome everybody to the next podcast recording from the three academicos. The academicos being myself, Douglas Millward, and my colleagues, Dr. Oleani and Dr. Peoples. So today's theme is distance learning versus face-to-face learning. Distance learning became a talking point during the COVID pandemic, basically focusing on how well or how badly various institutions provided learning online. To some people, it appeared that distance learning was a new thing, but this is not true in the UK. The Open University, OU, which Catherine can speak about in a minute, started delivering distance learning HE courses, initially via TV programmes and latterly via the internet, from the early 70s. So certainly in the UK, we've been doing kind of distance learning for HE for possibly over 50 years. A study by Barley and Liu in 2018 showed that student perceptions favoured face-to-face training, but their quantitative analysis showed no significant differences in performance or attainment. Indeed, some students found DL allowed them to be more innovative. And so the first question would be, what are the advantages or disadvantages of distance learning versus face-to-face learning? And Cappy, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, thanks, Doug. It's an interesting one, actually, because as you said, the OU have been doing this for quite a long time, so it's nothing new to us in terms of distance learning. I think it's the fact that we still are in an environment where the face-to-face element is quite heavy on the agenda. But I think that took a knock on the head during COVID, and then we all had to implement distance learning in some form or other, where we couldn't accommodate that specified 2 meter distance within classrooms. So it's a good question to ask to look at what the advantages and disadvantages are. In terms of disadvantages for distance learning, something that a lot of academics discovered is the fact that you can't just immediately take your face-to-face learning material and put it in a distance learning format. So it has to be something that was specifically designed or tailored for distance learning delivery. So that was one key disadvantage. I think that's what a lot of academics had to struggle with during COVID times. The other key, so that's in terms of calling a disadvantage, is it really, or is it more about preparedness and looking at being more innovative in our delivery and how we put across information to our students? The other disadvantage, or something else that a lot of academics complain about, is that lack of face-to-face familiarity that you have when you're doing distance learning. So you can't read the room, as it were. You can't see the whites of the eyes of the students and tell who's there and who isn't and whether or not to adapt your delivery. And again, it comes to having a different mindset when it comes to distance learning. So for me, those are the two disadvantages that have been picked on by a lot of academics and which needs probably a bit more in terms of educating academics on how distance learning differs from face-to-face and how you adapt accordingly.
Yeah, I think there's some very good points there, and I think we'll come back and touch on some of them a little bit later in the podcast. Catherine, have you got any thoughts or views about this?
Yeah, so, you know, relating to the point made by Nikebe, there's also the challenge of ensuring tutors can teach in a distance learning way. So not all tutors may have the communication abilities perhaps to do that in a successful way. So they may need some further training, or, you know, to be able to support them in doing that. And the other thing to think about is that, you know, some tutors might not want to work in a distance learning way, so they may not be as engaging perhaps maybe in the distance learning teaching as they would be in a face-to-face scenario. You know, going beyond the tutor perspective then, you know, from the point of view of the student, there's challenges with regards to ensuring that the student who's submitting the work is the student who's completing the work as well. And as a tutor, from the tutor point of view, it's difficult for us to know exactly if that's the fact, you know, that the student who does the work is the one who submits the work. So then that leads on then to challenges with regards to the design of assessment as well. So ideally you would might have some type of video engagement or presentation component so that you know that the student it is the student who is equipped with the skills. So that places requirements on the way in which assessment is designed. In terms of advantages of distance learning, I think one of the main ones is probably accessibility of the educational experience to a wide variety of people. So people who need to become educated for work, but also people who choose to be educated as well, possibly at a later stage of life. And it allows students to fit the study in around their commitments, their prior commitments as well. So yeah, those would be a couple that would come to my mind immediately.
Yeah, I'd have to agree on that actually. Sorry, just to agree on that in terms of the flexibility piece, and that's a big advantage now for students because we're getting more and more mature students who have families and full-time jobs, and trying to make sure that they're able to work around those commitments is quite key. And if we're interested in actually widening participation, which a lot of in universities are interested in, that's something what that needs to be taken into account.
And I guess probably a final point might be the idea that if you have students with learning difficulties, the fact that it's very easy and almost kind of default to kind of record our distance learning means that they can go back and look at recordings several times, and it might make it easier for people with learning difficulties to kind of absorb and understand the material as well, basically.
I would say to counteract though as well, you know, for people with special needs, the distance learning may pose, it's a very interesting one. It may pose a barrier, but for some special needs students as well, it's a really safe environment for them as well. So yeah, there's I think the special needs is a very interesting consideration in the distance learning.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. So, talking about kind of the pandemic, which we kind of touched on, there was a post-pandemic study by Gerhes et al. In 2021, and they supported a lot of the findings of the report discussed previously. But additionally, they recommended a blended learning approach, combining the best aspects of both distance learning and face-to-face learning. So the second question is, and this kind of follows on from what we've just been talking about, what are the pros and cons of blended learning, and how does that kind of fit in with distance learning, and maybe what kind of mixes are we thinking about? You know, is it 50-50? Is it, 20-80? Basically, how would that split work, do you think? And Kepi, do you want to go with that one?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so that's a difficult one to answer because it would depend on the subject being taught and the students that are in that particular scenario. So whether or not that would satisfy the requirements of that particular course. So to understand whether or not it's 50-50 or not, those are the things to consider really. But that is actually a pro for blended learning, the fact that you can consider the various elements of who your students are, what kind of subject you're delivering, and how this would work for them. So for me, that's a big positive really when it comes to blended learning. And again, you could bring in the students with special needs piece into this as well, and more or less you'd have to take them into account when you're developing or designing such learning.
So, and I guess the other thing is the kind of how do you define blended learning? I mean, is it literally having face to face and distance learning together, or is it the fact that you've got distance learning lectures stroke seminars, but then the other blended part may be kind of private study or private, like for example, if you've got a scientific discipline, maybe kind of private studies in create doing their own experiments or whatever in their own time outside of the kind of learning. So I suppose even defining what blended learning is, maybe as you mentioned, a more kind of difficult kind of concept. Catherine, do you have any views on that?
I think student desires and perhaps expectations around blended learning have changed, and they've been allowed to change as well since COVID. I think students don't necessarily want to have that face-to-face learning as part of the blended approach. You know, if they subscribe for the distance learning, then you know they want to do it at a distance, and the face-to-face may just be an inconvenience for them because it doesn't offer that flexibility and accessibility that they think that they signed up to. So I would say that that is maybe one way that the online education has evolved in recent years. But there obviously are lots of benefits of having the blended learning approach, and I think it's not just from the student point of view, but also the tutor point of view. I know a number of tutors who do teach online, but they love to have that face-to-face blended component as well. But unfortunately, it does seem to be fading out, from what I can see.
Yeah, I mean, that's another good point, actually, as you say. I mean, we've got to take on board what the students want to get out of this and how they prefer to learn, as you say. So at the moment, what we've been doing is talking about kind of HE, but of course, what we're kind of concerned with at Illumi Learn is more of a kind of an FE focus. Now, there's a relatively limited number of studies about distance learning and FE and kind of earlier education. By that I mean kind of secondary or whatever, right? Even though, as we discussed above, it was a major component of education during the pandemic. There's a Watson study from 2008 recommending, again, a combined blended approach while acknowledging the benefits of distance learning in K-12 learning programs. So K-12 is more of a kind of a, this was an American study, so we're looking at K-12 being an American standard as opposed to a UK standard, really. Okay. But the report focuses on a shift in emphasis brought on by distance learning from lecture to student-centered instruction, which I think was a point that kind of Catherine was making. So the third question is then, how does further education use distance learning and distance learning techniques? And is it successful? So I think what we're saying is the stuff you were talking about before, that and I think that the main kind of focus here is the idea of a shift from lecture to student-centered instruction, which I think is what you were saying. So the thing about kind of face-to-face learning is it's, if you use the old language, we might call it kind of chalk and talk, right? The thing about kind of distance learning is you need to be most successful, you need to kind of move away from the idea of being chalk and talk and make it more student-centered. So like I was saying before, maybe give students exercise they can work on in their own time, giving them time to study at their own kind of pace, and actually giving them, like you say, making it more focused on the student learning experience rather than just kind of chalking and talking. Does that make sense?
But then that doesn't really relate to that third question, does it, around DL and DL techniques?
Well, no, it does, because what the study said, it basically said that DL had kind of encouraged, I wouldn't say forced, DL had encouraged teachers at kind of secondary and further education to move from a lecture-focused instruction, i.e. from chalk and talk, to a more student-centered instruction, basically.
I think that's true actually, because at least I know in my daughter's school they're using Teams a lot more. They give them more homework and assessments and trying to get them to do a bit more research. And I think that's fed into FE, where they're using a lot of e-learning tools. So that's something that's derived from distance learning, especially when people are now using the internet to try and drive learning a bit more. So it has become a bit more student-centered. Rather than, you say, the standard chalk and talk, which, yeah, I can see that happening in schools and FE. So I would say it's the use of e-learning tools has definitely increased when it comes to looking at distance learning techniques. Yeah, that's a key point.
Okay, cool. So I think so we move on to say that there's other study by Ananga and Binney from 2017 looks at some of the lessons and innovation that HE brought about by the use of distance learning. So the fourth question is, are there lessons to be learned from HE and the long experience of distance learning that maybe we can bring to FE? So I think this is the question is, what kind of techniques have you used in the HE from a distance learning perspective, and which of those you think could be applied to FE? And Kepi, do you want to kick off with that one?
Yeah, so I think in terms of lessons learned, I think that, like, come back to the pandemic again, that really exposed a lot of things for a lot of academics across HEFE and schools as well. So I think I'm hoping that there's a bit of a new norm now across all these different institutions, which, as I said, would utilize a lot of e-learning tools. And just the fact that they're making it a bit more student-centered is another technique that's come from distance learning. For FE especially, and where students are taking probably not the what we'd call the normal routes in terms of getting a degree. This is quite key, especially where they're dealing with students with additional learning needs. So again, there are many tools out there which hopefully are being incorporated into courses to make sure that you're bringing that student-centered element into it, and they're able to excel in their courses. In terms of other techniques, like I say, I think it's mostly the fact that we're looking at more student-centered instruction and the use of e-learning tools. That'll be the key lessons from HE that's coming into distance learning for FE. I think there's still some ways to go in terms of making it more flexible for FE students, which is something HE seems to be getting on well with. So that's another learning point for FE, really, to see how they can make it more flexible for their students.
Catherine, have you got any kind of techniques from your experience of HE that you think might be able to be used?
I mean, I think in this situation that the pastoral support, so while you're saying student-centered learning, I think we also need to go into that pastoral side as well, and it becomes a lot more difficult whenever it is operating in a distance learning way. And you know, when you remember that 17-year-olds are still under the care of their parents as well. So you know, I know in my experience of online education, sometimes students who have a special learning need will have a nominated contact that, you know, the tutor will have to interact. So I think the tutors do have to be informed, like online tutors do have to be more informed about that pastoral support for the students that can be applied. And I think as well, there, you know, I have experience of one of my friends is a tutor in an HE, and you know, he frequently has to interact with the parents of his class, you know. And whenever I saw that question, it just made me think of that, you know, how would we manage that? And there would have to really be some mechanism of real tracking progress, I think. And distance learning at FE, we don't be so much concerned with that. It's the responsibility of the student to track and manage that. But there would have to be more monitoring, I think, or more regular contacts that we could make an assessment as to whether or not the progress is being achieved. You know, it's whenever you think about the differences, like when in FE, the differences between undergraduate and postgraduate study, it's where you're moving to become a more independent researcher. But then if we go back again to HE, you know, you're not even an undergraduate student, you're even before that. So yeah, that being able to track, I think, would be something that would need to be incorporated for the HE experience.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I never kind of really thought about that, providing them with ways of kind of tracking their progress. But I think that is a good point. I think it's possibly more. I think we're seeing some of it at HE as well. But I think you're right. At FE, definitely, I think there's more of a requirement to provide that kind of tracking and progress reporting, stroke recording than there is at higher levels, basically. So, okay. So thank you very much to both my guests today for their input and their insights. And just a final reminder to say, please go to lumilearn.academy for any more information about what we do. And please join us next time for the next podcast. So thank you, everybody. And that's all for now. Thanks. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
you. Bye.